Our next speaker is Mike Foulkes. He and Dara Catch have been working on, are both very avid amateur astronomers, and they've been observing eclipses for two decades, and they've been collaborating recently on experimenting with different techniques in image processing. Mike is going to be speaking about eclipse imaging, 20 years of trying to improve.
Well, good evening, everyone. And I think the first thing you'll notice is that 50% of me is missing. Derek and myself collaborated on this talk, and Derek has put a lot of effort into it, and he's in the audience today. But alas, he's feeling a little bit under the weather. So any deficiencies in this talk are going to be down to me. If we could have the lights down, please, I think it'd be a great help. Lovely. I think talking to an audience such as this to say eclipses are wonderful is a very redundant statement. But because eclipses are so fantastic, it's not surprising that people like to photograph eclipses. And over the years, there have been absolutely many, many, many fantastic pictures taken of eclipses, many by a lot of the people in this audience today. Furthermore, we can see lots of very excellent pictures out in the poster sessions in the hall. When we became interested in eclipses, the primary goal really was to see it visually. But in addition, we started taking photographs, and we've been to a number of eclipses, and the one thing that we wanted to do is at least every eclipse, try and get one photograph that would be at least part of the way as good as many of the experts in this room take. But where did it start? Well, I suppose for many of us, I'll have to say our introduction to eclipses is not through totality. It's due to partial eclipses. And when we also think of imaging, we think of photography. But when you're a young kid with nothing more than a simple single-lens refractor, eyepieces made from candlelight in a microscope, the only thing you can do is draw an eclipse. But all this was done many years ago, and it was certainly one of my first eclipses that I saw as a starter, hoping that one day I get to see the real thing. It's interesting that we've seen already today that some people are trying to draw eclipses to corona during totality. When we first started, we did the thing that all the textbooks recommend, a camera on a tripod. And on the left is Derek's first equipment using a mirror lens. And on the right, I tried to be a very clever corpse and operate two cameras on my first eclipse, and immediately found that it's very, very difficult. Secondly, used a C90 as a major imaging of eclipses, and that's a very good telescope, not bad optics, it's portable. But as you can see on here, the mount I had it on with a little drive system wasn't all that good and suffered from vibration. So I've got some reasonable pictures out of it. Some of them were blurred purely and simply because of vibration. But this is typical of some of our first results that was taken by Derek, using the standard way of using short exposures and second and third contact, and going through a stop all the way up into the central regions of totality, then going back again to get some pictures. And images like this come, obviously, we thought, yeah, we want to go to another eclipse, and we'd like to try and take some more photographs. As I said before, our primary aim is to see the eclipse. But furthermore, we both share the passion for specific things. Although we like to see the corona, or we like to see the shadow, the main thing that interested us was the prominences, Bailey's beads, and the chromosphere. And to get the resolution of that requires a fairly long focal lens. Added to that, of course, as soon as you get a long focal length telescope, it's weighty, you have a more stable mount. Then, of course, you think, well, I'd like to take a picture of the corona as well. You add another camera. And so, although the individual bits don't weigh very much, we enter the same problem that I think we've all experienced when we travel. We have far too much to carry. And there's always been the panic the night before that we think we're over the luggage limits. And I must confess that I've been some eclipses we've been to, we've really pushed our luck with airlines. And sometimes even have to take out some clothes so we can get the gear in. We've always left room for something to celebrate with the eclipse. Then, of course, I think the problem we found also was that if you have more complexity, more gear, things do go wrong. I mean, you always leave behind something. most important, the big bolt that holds everything together, you forget the screwdriver. So it's all fairly complex stuff. So when we've gone, and it does help in the fact there's been two of us, or with a number of other friends that are in the audience today, well, to say we try to keep things simple is probably a misnomer. We try not to be too complex with what we do. And over a few years, we've tried a number of things. We've tried film cameras, we've tried video cameras, we've even tried digital cameras, not all at the same time. And I'm going to quickly run through each of them very shortly. We've also used a vast variety of lenses and telescopes to try things, usually with our prime camera dedicated to seeing the prominences, and perhaps if we're looking at carrying another camera for the corona and other things as well. And one thing that I'll talk about a little bit later on, which is a favourite of mine, is using short focal length lenses for reasons which I will try and explain. The one thing we've never tried, we're a little bit in the steam age, we've never tried using anything computer controlled or rubber fire, such as Glenn Schneider described this morning. So what's our basic setup that we've evolved over the few years? Well, I suppose for film, we've used Olympus cameras, the good old OM1s and OM2s. Perfectly good cameras, other good cameras, but these we like very much. I suppose the big attraction, particularly for both of the mechanical operation, though with the OM2, if the battery goes flat, it does lock up. But the OM1 is purely mechanical, which means that we don't need any batteries per se. We may use motor winders, but you can still use the camera without any batteries. I don't know how such cameras would operate in the extreme Antarctic environment we heard about this morning. The other thing we like about these cameras is they've got interchangeable screens, and you can get some quite good focusing screens, and being very short-sighted, that's a great benefit in itself. Certainly on the OM1, the mirror will lock up, but we've never noticed any obvious vibration problems with these cameras. And mostly we've used slide film in various speeds, commercially processed. My particular favourite is Kodachrome, but that's just a favourite of mine. And for some strange reason, we've never actually tried using print film. As I mentioned earlier, we've also tried over the years different types of camera lenses and telescopes. You sort of see 90 earlier on. But for a number of eclipses, our favourite instrument has been the Teleview Pronto. These are really nice little telescopes, very stocky, very rigidly built, very well built in fact, excellent optics, a little bit expensive, but perhaps the main strength is they're only about 16 or 17 inches long, which means they're highly plausible. But in other cases, it's a bit of a weakness because the focal length is only about 480 millimetres, which means to get high resolution images of the prominences, to get focal lengths greater than 1 metre, we usually have to have a Barlow lens or a teleconverter. And given the optical configuration of the Pronto, we also have to have an additional tube to get the focus in the right position. And this makes the telescope a little bit longer. And with all these tubes added, it needs to be mounted fairly rigidly. And what we tend to do is mount the camera, fasten the camera down and have a second mounting point using the telescope cradle. And to focus, what we found, we can loosen off the telescope cradle a little bit. And when we focus, it's actually the telescope that moves up and down rather than the camera moving back from the telescope. And it does work quite well. Now, the Pronto is not the only good telescope around. I think we're very fortunate. There's a large number of very excellent telescopes on the market today. We've got Schmidt-Cassegrain, we've got Maxeon-Post, and certainly there's a lot more manufacturers doing the small refractor that is portable, although obviously you pay a premium for the cost of such instruments. Another instrument that Derek has tried is the Maxeon-Post telescope that's manufactured in this country by a company called Orion. They've certainly got good reputations, and we've looked through this, and it's largest sibling, a 20 centimetre telescope, and they're very, very good optics indeed. This one has a diameter of 140 millimetres, and I'd say its largest sibling, which we use on the Transit Venus, is about 20 centimetres aperture, and not all that big. And certainly on a low altitude totality, it's very good to fit on a tripod with no problems at all. This is out in the Australian desert, and as Derek is pointing out, it looks as if ET's taking this photograph. And of course, Derek's using the tried and trusted method used by Australians to stop dehydration, drinking copious amounts of Victoria Bitter. But what about mountings? Particularly when you're using long focal lengths, of course, the Eclipse Sun's going to rocket across the field of view. Like many, many other amateurs before us, we've gone to using equatorial mounts. I suppose the problem here is that this adds to the mass of your luggage, and if you have a driven mount, then you've got to cater for batteries or some sort of power supply. Here's two of the mounts that we've used for a number of years. Prior to that, I had an old equatorial mount that weighed an absolute ton. It was undriven, looked like old steel tubes and piping. And the reason I stopped using it is because once going to an eclipse, going to Baja in California in 91, going through the States, it seemed to attract a lot of attention from the US customs. I thought, I don't want to go through that again. Now, certainly the advantage of an equatorial mount, you can track the sun. And one other thing that we've adapted from looking at the experts, such as Fred Espen at the moment, is having perhaps two cameras on the mount. Having this is something that appealed to us immensely. And because there's two of us, we can split the load doing different focal lengths. The problem, however, is that with the German equatorial mount, which I'm sure many of you know, they do need a counterbalance. Now, Derek is far more sensible than I am and has one telescope on one side of the mount and another on the other, so he's not carrying any redundant mount weight, whereas I've had to go to having a counterweight on one side of the mount. And this means that you're carrying dead mass when you're travelling on the plane. Sometimes I've had to do this, and I hope I can get away with bringing extra luggage through onto the airline. Sometimes I have to make do with anything that's available on the site, you know, something heavy, something filled with sand. In some countries, it's that easy. Don't take a weight. A few days before the eclipse, you go to the sport shop and buy a couple of weights that are used on barbells. But the really efficient way I found of doing it is to go on the eclipse with Sheridan Williams. And he volunteers to go down the shop and bring you back a big weight to go on the mount. That I'm eternally grateful. I said the advantage of using equatorial is that it will track the sun. But to make it for its full effect, what you've got to do is polar align it to pole star in the northern hemisphere or in the southern hemisphere. We've never tried to set the kit up the night before and do it using the stars. We've never been in a position to do that. And usually we use compasses or a GPS. But if you forget that all-important widget of using a compass or a GPS, then sometimes we've had a bit of a disagreement about which way is north. But despite that, it actually worked. So we were able to track the sun during the eclipse. Although it is a disadvantage carrying all this weight around all sorts of countries, the fact that the thing is tracking the sun, unless you kick the tripod leg, is a great advantage. It's one less thing to worry about. So, how have we got on with some of the things? Well, as I mentioned before, our first attempts, well, particularly my own, going on a slightly wobbly mount, meant that going something more stable. And these are just going onto something, the pictures that were taken with the C90 or a Mirrorland, something a bit more stable, and certainly got over the vibration problem. And also reasonable image scales as well that show the prominences in the inner corona. Perhaps the biggest advantage we did though was using the Pronto. I said this is really good optics, and straight away that you can see there's bits of structure in the prominences. Indeed, this image probably hasn't been scanned as well as light, but I can just about see here, and it's certainly on the original, there's all sorts of material that seems to be dribbling down from that prominence, which is one of this, of course, was one of the images in 1999. I've tended to concentrate on doing old disk images, where Derek has gone for broke and gone for the higher image scales, either by combining two Barlow lenses or a teleconverter. And again, with the Pronto, the image quality is pretty good. And here's two images taken from 1999 by Derek, showing the high resolution that we were getting with these little telescopes. The other thing that we like doing is using the motor winders that come with the Olympus. This allows us just to keep firing the camera as we go through second and third contact. How can I deal with the lower image first? This is one that Derek took as we, again on this high image scale, going through second contact, and you can see the diminution in the lovely Bailey's beads and the appearance of the provinces. I think the title of this is a bit misnomer, but I think actually this might be third contact. But again, this is an image Derek took at the Angler in Australia in 2012. And I think the interesting thing about this is, first of all, because of using multiple bar lenses, there are internal reflections. Although this is a very large amulet, you can see there and there prominences were visible, which was something that certainly Derek didn't have to expect at all. So this is typical of some of the sort of higher image scales that we've managed to get with the contact. We're very pleased with it. I mentioned the OMC 140 earlier on, and I'll show some images of that a bit later on. But at the other extreme, this is something that I personally like doing. Certainly, short focal lenses are not going to show the detail in the prominences or even the all the detail in the corona. But it does offer the opportunity to see any bright planets or stars nearby, and we've already seen them today on some of the images, possibly the shadow. And of course, if the sun is at the low, the eclipse sun is at the low angle, perhaps some scenery as well. I think it was Sheridan Williams who talked about some of the benefits of seeing eclipses at low angle at a previous conference. Here's some typical images that we've managed to do with lenses in that sort of range, 50 to 150 mil. On the left is one showing Jupiter and Mercury from 1998, and that's actually the original one. It does actually show a little bit of detail in the corona, which is the way it's scanned. On the right is an interesting image, which I think is a fairly pleasing image. This was taken after annularity in Scotland. We missed annularity by a couple of minutes because of the mist over the Foray Mirth in northern Scotland. But the moon came out in through all the Scottish mist. Interesting story behind this one. I set the camera on, my girlfriend wanted to take a picture of the eclipse for herself, and she took this one, and in many ways it was a far more satisfying picture than we took with all the Wizzo gear. Of course, we can get the sun at low altitude here in Australia, showing something I like to see, which is the shadow. But certainly, I think one thing I'd like to try in the future is to photograph the shadow using very wide angle lenses. We saw some excellent photographs of shadow with wide angle lenses this morning. I know the speaker after me, Nigel, has taken some superb images of the shadow using wide angle lenses. But here we can see how narrow it was in Australia, where we were out in the desert, and a nice picture as well. Even doing something handheld, you can just see something happen. Remember in Madagascar, the eclipse, the game organised by Sheridan Williams. We were in a very fortunate position where fourth contact was occurring at sunset. And I'll show some higher resolution images a little bit later on. But this was literally taken by hand holding the camera, and we were very fortuitous. You can just see the little nick out of the sun just at the top there. And this seemed to be when I showed four family and friends with eclipse pictures. This is the one they seem to like the most. I suppose the problem with some of these wide angle shots, you're never sure of the exposure to use. And even based on past experience, you usually have to do a lot of bracketing. And certainly, it would be nice to take images and see what they look like straight away, and just, you know, the exposure, and not have to wait until you get home, get the film off to somewhere to be developed, hope it doesn't get damaged. And of course, that brings us into the regime of digital cameras. Before I actually go on to the camera itself and expand the discussion a little bit in terms of digitisation, in terms of scanning and image processing, obviously to get fast light onto the screen, we have to have to scan the slides in and digitise them, which opens all sorts of possibilities to processing in some manner, even just sharpening the images or getting rid of any dust specks. And something that I must confess we are absolute beginners at is actually combining images as well. Certainly by taking such short exposures to the prominences, you just see the prominences in black sky. Longer exposures bring out the corona, as we heard earlier this morning, but overexposing the prominences. And I know a number of the experts have managed to combine images and get a view that's more akin to what we see visually, but we're very much beginners at that. For some typical images, this is actually a digital image taken by Derek, just simply montaging numerous images together where the field of view of the telescope is relatively small, gives a nice picture. And this is an example of where we try to do some things by combining images to bring out both the prominences, that's shown here in 2001, and there's a little one up there, and the inner corona as well. And this is something we're going back, some of our images we're taking here, to see if we can improve on this a little bit. But it's a technique. The major thing that we've found, and I'm sure many people have found as well, is the arrival of the digital single lens camera. This has certainly revolutionised the way people go to do text imaging. We already heard a little bit about it this morning, about the trials and tribulations of using digital cameras in Antarctica. Certainly, they have a number of pros and cons. I think the pros are, of course, you can take an image and see straight away whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And of course, on cameras, they're very easy to use, change the sensitivity and the exposure. One thing we haven't tried, but these cameras do have the facility for, is you can drive them by a computer, you fit various telescopes and lenses to them, all sorts of mini features. On the con side, Alice, another thing about pros. On the con side, however, they are pretty expensive, although recently, as technology advances, it's interesting that sort of the new Canon and Nikons have actually come down and halved in price almost compared to the D100. They're battery driven, so you need batteries so they don't conk out, and we heard earlier the difficulties in Antarctica. Another problem is it's when you're taking lenses off, you get dirt onto the chip and sort of ruffles all over your images. We've had experience of the Fuji S1 and the Nikon D100, and one thing we have noticed is that the focusing screens are certainly not as good as our Olympuses, and we found these a little bit more difficult to focus up. But another thing about the cameras is the chips are not as big as 35mm film, and therefore we find we get a sort of slightly larger image scale and not necessarily so many far loads and other things in front of the telescope. And these sort of typical images that we manage to get with digital SLRs and compared to slide film. First of all, you don't get the same, these have been blown up to be on the same image scale. And because the chip is smaller, the image scale is larger, you can't get the full sun in, even though these have got equivalent focal length. Very similar sorts of images, but of course, with the digital, you see what you've got straight away. With the slide film, you have to get home, go to the X-ray machines, make sure not that's there, get it posted off, and other things. Here's another comparison of slide and digital. Very similar sort of terms of resolution, slightly different exposures, but you can see very similar features. And of course, when you've got a digital image, we can blow this up. This prominent, Derek thought, looked very much like a dragon. And here we see it blown up from the image, and I think you can see it's got its wings and stuff and tail and everything else. So the digital is very good, although very expensive. And again, some images that we've taken, we're both with digital and SLR. This is that sunset, the fourth contact in Madagascar when we were there. See this final nick out of the sun. Whereas Derek could take a stream of pictures using a digital camera at the time to get the right exposure. For myself, I had to wrap up a whole film with various stops and pick out the best ones that look the best exposure. So a good advantage of the digital. Here's another digital image that we've got. Great resolution, and again you can see that you can get the right exposure for these. Here's some more, just move quickly on, and some more, and this one again getting the right exposure very quickly, whereas with film cameras, lots of bracketing to try and get something at the sunset in Australia. The final thing that we've tried, of course, is video, and Derek's really expert on this. And the one thing he's trying is a Canon camera where the lens is removable, and we can either fit a normal camera lens or our beloved Pronto telescope. And here you can see when the telescope is really long, in addition of lots of extension tubes and barrel lens for photographing it. And using this sort of technique is very good. We've got a couple of video clips to show you in a minute, but before we do that, I think the one thing we notice about photography is it's fairly static. You get an image and that's it. And of course eclipses, I'm sure we all know, are very exciting things. People get very excited, very wound up. But certainly the advantage of video is that you can see the whole dynamism of the eclipse taking place. And with a camera like this, you can shoot through all the exposures, get the exposure to the prominences, get the exposure to the corona. We've probably got time for two of the clips that we've got here. No one's overrun. Both taken by Derek. The first was taken in 94, up in the Andes. The second one was taken in India, which is where we were, a very short eclipse, essentially using the same thing. Because of the focal length of the lens, we're only getting part of the summit. And I'm really impressed with the first eclipse. Derek was manually driving his equatorial mount and scanning round and going through the photographs. A nice video, and I think also helps show the how exciting eclipses can be. Should we have the first video, or both the two video clips, please?
The shirt, fucking hell.
Here she comes.
Yes, breathe it out.
Wonderful. Brilliant.
Yeah.
quiz. Just slightly overrunning. So perhaps to wrap up, what can we say about some of the things that we've done? Well, certainly from the Eclipse's mission, you can't do everything. Eclipse has got so many facets, shadow bands, the shadow. Even with two of us operating a couple of cameras, we found we just can't do everything. So it's not worth trying, just concentrate on something. The same practice makes perfect. Well, we've been both fortunate to go to 8 Eclipses, which is not as many as some. Of course, you don't want to turn up on site and do things that go wrong. And as all the experts recommend, it's all down to planning and trying to work out what you're going to do in advance. And one of the things that we've found is all the instructions that are given by the various experts, talking to people such as in this forum, seeing all the wonderful images that are taken and put on the SEML. All them things have been something that we've taken into account in trying to work out how we're going to try and photograph eclipses. And of course, the most important thing of all is to actually see the thing rather than just concentrating on taking images. But one eclipse, the 91 eclipse, I was next to an American guy, very well known astrophotographer, I'll keep his name quiet, who took some wonderful pictures at the end of that for over 6.5 minutes of totality, said he never actually looked and never actually saw it. So certainly that's something that we want to do. Over the years we've tried to do things like what the experts do. We've had many problems. Kicking a tripod so the image goes out the field of view at second contact is not to be recommended. We've overshot, overzealous use of motor winders run out of film. We've even had occasions when we found that the telescopes are not tracking, only to realise that we're driving it the wrong way into the hemisphere that we're in. Filters won't come off, bolts won't undone, we left the screwdriver at home. But we're always trying to improve, and certainly there's lots of things that we'd like to do if we're fortunate to go through the eclipse, or perhaps try computer control, perhaps try wide-angle lenses, get more into the processing side of things. But I think over the years that we've tried to improve a little bit from the most basic of techniques, going through to having a decent mount, getting better optics, perhaps going digital, and finishing off with this photograph by Derek of our very favourite objects, the chromosphere, the prominences and the Bayley's beads. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for your attention.
There's nothing to get the blood moving like a good eclipse video with a good soundtrack. Mike, any questions for Mike? Okay, we're gonna keep moving along. You can talk to Mike during dinner.